Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for charter school leaders, brought to you by Central Michigan University, the Center for Charter Schools, a leader in educational choice and quality. My name is Orlando Castellan, and I'm here joined with my colleagues, Jonathan Arnberg and Janelle Brzezinski. Hello to you both.
Hi. Hi, great to be here again.
Great to be here again. Excited about our guest today, Dr. Allison Arnold, who leads the Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness at Central Michigan University.
Yeah, and certainly an important conversation as we talk about adverse childhood experiences, or more commonly termed as ACEs. Some things that we've offered some professional development events for our partner schools here in the past, but an important resource for all schools and all just all individuals to know as we all are members of our own communities. So really important. We are honored to have her, and great to still be here for another episode of the podcast. You can find our podcast on our website, which is thecenterforcharters.org. You can also find us on every podcast platform, from Apple Podcasts to Stitcher. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode.
Well, great. Thank you, Janelle. And we'll look forward to chatting with Allison shortly.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders.
So we're excited to welcome Dr. Allison Arnold as our guest this week. Dr. Arnold directs the Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness at Central Michigan University. Welcome.
Thank you, Orlando.
Can you tell us about the Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness at CMU?
I'd be happy to, and it is a long name. So the CMU Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness was really an idea that was brought about by five of our different colleges within the university a few years ago, all recognizing that each one of these colleges, including our College of Education and Human Services, our College of Medicine, our College of Health Professions, our College of Liberal Arts and Social Sciences, and the College of Arts and Media, that every single one of these programs had faculty and students that were focusing on community health and wellness, and recognizing that many of the issues that we struggle with today cut across so many professional sectors. And as we talk today more about schools and their intersection in the community, this is an area where our center has been actively involved over the last several years and really grown our body of work.
And as our guests will shortly understand, Dr. Arnold's experience cuts across lots of sectors, including education and business and philanthropy, with over 15 years in educational experience. And that's why we're so excited to talk to you about ACEs today. Dr. Arnold is also a master trainer for the Michigan ACEs Initiative. Can you explain to us a little bit about the ACEs Initiative and what does ACEs mean?
Sure. The term ACEs was really came about, it was as a result of a very large study that was conducted in the 1990s on adverse childhood experiences. And so that's what the term ACEs refers to. And the Michigan ACE Initiative is underway. It's a statewide public health initiative to raise awareness at all levels of understanding in the state, not just those who work with children, but all sectors and all communities around the state about the health impacts of early childhood adversity, because there is a lifelong consequence of untreating traumatic stress and adversity that may occur in children's growing up years. And so the Michigan ACE Initiative was launched several years ago. As you mentioned, Orlando, I'm a master trainer. There's a whole network of master trainers and community champions all across the state, which is wonderful for anyone listening here across communities in Michigan served by schools, is that they can reach out to this network, and there are champions and master trainers and resources that they can invite in to work together with parents and faculty and school teachers and staff as well.
And how common are ACEs in our general public population?
They're very common. In fact, the study that was conducted that I referenced in the 1990s was really, that was the revelation that adversity cuts across our entire population, our entire culture. And most of us, some 66%, have experienced at least one of these adversities. And when I say what that is, they're highly stressful, traumatic events that occur in children's growing up years. So let's say before the age of 18 or 20. And those could be any form of abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, neglect, any sort of violence that children may have witnessed in their home and growing up, other household dysfunctions that might include substance abuse in the household or mental illness in their immediate family, a parent or a caregiver being incarcerated, and children's stress levels and family stress levels dealing with all of this. This cuts across every demographic. It is not just something that you might think of happens only in certain communities, although some communities do have additional environmental challenges, as we know, that may be health related, that may be truly environmental factors like water safety and other kinds of factors, and that adds additional stress and complexity. But we know that combination of the child's earliest relationships as well as the environment in which they're growing up in is a huge determinant in their lifelong health. And so that's why it's important that we raise awareness so that we can prevent and begin to eliminate these factors.
And so you indicated that it's a huge determinant in lifelong health, but there is also some evidence of brain development impact. Can you share what the science says on that?
Sure. So what we're coming to know is this physiological effect of traumatic stress and adversity, and it really changes the way our neurological development happens, so that as children experience stress on the daily in this kind of environment, their body produces stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline. And when that is continually flowing in a child's system, that impairs their healthy brain development. It impairs other physiological systems from developing the way they should. And so as we see this happen and continue to happen over the growth and development of the child, it can really create learning delays. It can create significant kinds of conditions that present in later decades, including all sorts of chronic illnesses that we're seeing today, including obesity, asthma, heart disease. All of these chronic illnesses, many of them have a root cause in untreated trauma that occurs in the early years.
Yeah, and you're sharing a little bit about how we see that impact in our life. Is there anything that shows kind of warning signs of knowing that a lot of our listeners are in the school environment of those impacts on their school day and how a student might be showing ACEs through maybe behaviors during the school day that people should be mindful of?
Well, traumatic experiences and highly stressful experiences, I think we should begin to assume that they're, as I mentioned, very common across all of our communities and populations. And so it's to be expected that, you know, that children might carry some of these feelings that linger on into their school day experiences. And so we really do need to become aware of what some of those behavioral manifestations are, but in some cases they're not always something that shows. So that's one reason when schools become trauma informed, that they really begin to understand what's showing and what's not showing. So what might be showing are things like developmental delays, language delays, memory difficulties, differences in how children play and socialize, self-regulation challenges that teachers may encounter with certain children, aggression, different kinds of behaviorals that may be behaviors that might be maladaptive, because when our body is experiencing stress, we adapt to that. And so all of those response triggers, you know, we talk about fight or flight when we are in a stressful situation, that's underway. And sometimes those responses don't always fit into what might be expected in a learning environment and can really impede learning. You know, as that progresses over time, you know, we might see children in families with high absenteeism and, you know, continued school failures that kind of pile up. And, you know, the big shift in our thinking is not what is wrong here with this particular individual child, but is what's happening in this child's life that we need to get to the bottom of that may be hindering their ability to learn successfully in the classroom.
What about the societal impact? Because I would expect that the cost of treatment, the cost of prevention have to be pretty astronomical. Does that manifest itself, you know, in the cost, I guess, to society for treatment and prevention?
Absolutely. And I think that's one reason, like why the Michigan ACE initiative has really put vast resources around this. I mean, this is really a public health epidemic. When we think about the levels of stress and trauma that proliferate throughout our culture today, and recognizing that it's total cost over a lifetime, and all of these chronic diseases, like I just mentioned, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, cancer, that the root cause can be something that we can prevent way, way, way upstream, is something that I think we're really just getting our arms around now. And if you take that back to our schools, when we think about all the important supports that we have in schools for special education, making sure that we have social emotional development resources in play for schools, for, you know, challenges that we have when we're trying to get everyone up to level as far as their academic performance, that's a vast investment. Mm-hmm. And when that investment fails, you know, we all know about the school to prison pipeline that we've heard so much about. And there's a lot of research that says that kind of starts in the elementary grades when they can be seen that children are not being successful or not being supported. So I believe that schools have a big role to play in this, in solving ACEs and preventing ACEs from getting passed along from one generation to another. And that is one more thing. When you asked earlier about the physiological aspects of adverse childhood experiences and trauma on the body, there is an epigenetic aspect too, that we know now that ACEs or trauma can also disrupt the way that our genes are expressed. And so we know that when we think about historical trauma, that there may be generations who have had struggles historically in our nation's history, but that's also physiological too, that we know now that this is something that can get passed along even in utero. So mothers who are pregnant, we need to reduce their stress levels. We need to be supportive and provide a lot of prenatal and even perinatal support in those earliest years.
So experience can actually be inherited.
The propensity, yes, can be inherited. But on the other side, there is this message of hope, because we know that ACEs can be mitigated dramatically by the presence of supports in someone's life when they are experiencing trauma or ACEs, or when they need to heal from an experience of trauma and ACEs. One really great example of, I think, a way that schools today are bringing supports and cooperating with other sectors of the community is a program some communities have begun to implement in Michigan called Handle with Care. And it looks at the whole family's life, and if something happens in a family situation that may bring in a first responder or a law enforcement, whether or not that has anything to do with the school day, when they know that there are children involved, the communities who are implementing Handle with Care have a cooperation between law enforcement and schools, where the law enforcement agency will notify the school and say, you know what? Allison had something happen, and so handle Allison with care this week in school. And that's all the school needs to know, but they know that something beyond that school day may be disrupting that child's ability to focus or learn or kind of be present in the way that the school would welcome otherwise.
So you mentioned Handle with Care, which is a result of some of the work that they've done in this area. We know that the study started sometime in the 1990s out in California, which has resulted in people taking an increased look at what is happening physiologically, mentally with these children, with the brain function. And then there's been some outcomes of that. One of that is the Handle with Care. There's been other programs that have been initiated in schools that some of our listeners might be familiar with. Can you share what some of those may be and what you're seeing and what some of the next steps the schools should be thinking about when they have some of these experiences?
Sure. So the study that was conducted in the 1990s was a broad-scale study. It was a study of adults that reflected back on things that happened to them. Some 17,000 adults were surveyed and reflected if any of those adversities happened to them that I mentioned earlier: abuse, neglect, living with someone with mental illness or substance abuse, all of those factors. And at the same time, we had this wonderfully advancing arena of early childhood development, understanding that those first 5 years of brain development are so critical. And over the last few decades, all this science has converged. And we do know now that there are things that we can do in those early developing years, and also that schools can do as part of that process that can make a huge difference. And parental support is one, parental engagement in their child's education. And so how do schools do that with an understanding that maybe some of these parents, as I mentioned, carry a trauma history with themselves as well. So how can schools be more sensitive to understanding what trauma is and to recognize it and then to respond to it? And so what we see are great resources available for schools to embrace to become more trauma-informed. And some of those skills and strategies are certainly focused on building the capacity of classroom teachers, but it's beyond that. There's a whole wealth of resources for helping classroom teachers think about how they differentiate learning for all of their individual students and how they can connect students and families with resources when they see that there may be some learning challenges. But beyond that, the whole school community really can come together. And what we're seeing now are a set of principles that are becoming kind of commonly accepted about what it means to be a trauma-informed community or trauma-responsive communities. And it means, first and foremost, that you focus on safety. And that's everyone's safety, from the child's safety in the classroom, and that's behavior, that's emotional safety, as well as physical safety, but it's throughout the whole day. And so trauma-informed schools begin to raise awareness of everyone that has touch points with their children in the school. It could be bus drivers that pick children up in the morning to understand that something that they see may be showing them that a child may be experiencing stress and trauma, and how do they pass that along to parapros working with students in the classroom, to those circumstances where lunch aides and playground aides and other support staff in the school all understand what it looks like to be trauma-informed. But we also realize that that safety needs to extend to those in the school community too. Once again, I said most of us have grown up with some sort of adversity. So we can guess that maybe some of our teachers and our parapros also have a lot of stress going on in their lives too. And so how can the school be supportive of that kind of environment? So safety and support is a principle. Another is trustworthiness and communication and empowerment. And so that means that trauma-informed schools really take that take it seriously to self-reflect. And so we'll see administrators and teachers looking at their policies. Like, so what do we do when we have a situation where we've got a child that cannot self-regulate? How do we escalate that? In our state, we have an extraordinary number of preschool expulsions. Now, that is not a trauma-informed policy when we really think about why we would need to understand why it is that a child can't regulate to the point where we're expelling them from preschool. So many of our districts are really working with parents and saying, we've got to create a different set of policies that provide support rather than are punitive. And in many cases, reconsider some of those expulsion kinds of policies where we may be sending the student right back to the stress that is causing their situation now. We see a lot of looking at the school day and understanding what those triggers might be for children who do have high stress going on in their lives, and how we can bring some of those down with different kinds of environments, different kinds of instructional choices that teachers can make. But it really calls upon the school community to dedicate itself as a whole community to first and foremost pay attention to the health and self-care of their staff and their teachers, and provide time to create that environment, and then to engage other partners in the community. What I mean by that is, we know that trauma is something that is present in the lives of children and families who live in a certain community. So schools cannot be the only organization that is, or the only entity that is trying to mitigate trauma. And many schools have partnered with their community mental health, with their local public health departments. And I've actually seen in some cases, there are some examples of schools in Michigan that have repositioned some of the health home for families to the school. So there's opportunities for clinics or for healthcare or for counseling that are beginning to be repositioned at the school, which is a wonderful partnership that is beginning to be more prevalent.
So you began talking about some of the resources or some of the next step for schools, and I love the idea that this can't be just about what teachers and kids are doing in the classroom. It's really got to be a community approach, meaning that board members have to understand what their policies are directing their administration and teachers to do towards doing, and love the idea of getting additional partners involved. Knowing that we have schools at various phases of this process, we were fortunate enough to have you in last year to do two board development series events with us, one on the east side of the state, one on the west side of the state, helping schools understand this idea. What is the next step for them? Mm-hmm. What are some resources that they can uncover to continue on their path towards becoming a trauma-informed school?
Thanks for asking that question. And there are quite a few resources. Once again, a repository of these is the Michigan ACE Initiative, and their website is mi.ace.org. But they have a wealth of resources that schools might connect with. And also the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services has an awesome checklist for how do you begin this journey down the road of becoming a trauma-informed school. And so there are some real ready resources to take and begin to kind of self-reflect on. And then there's also networks of supports, whether they're consulting resources, online education resources that schools can readily reach out to. That's a big portion of what I do when I work and some of these programs that we've had in the past and that are coming up. I believe we have another professional development program coming up in mid-April with the charters. But I do a lot of referring to these resources and helping schools kind of think about where they are in that journey and then what might be the next step for them, because it is a unique journey for each school community. And I think one important first step is making sure that you have the broad commitment to that. That includes parents coming up to understand what trauma is, teachers and staff coming up to understand what trauma is and what we can all do about it together, and bringing your coalition or your collaborative together to commit to working on that.
Perfect. Well, and Allison, we certainly appreciate you being here with us today. As Orlando mentioned, we have had the honor of having you for some professional development events. All of those resources are certainly available still on our website, and we appreciate you sharing those with our school community. We hope that your insights today will serve as a wonderful resource for our schools and listeners as well. And we truly, truly appreciate your insights and your expertise in this very important topic to the students that we serve and certainly to our schools as their community during the day. One question that we do like to ask all of our podcast guests, as this is an education podcast, is if you have some teachers that have had an impact on your life that you would like to share a little bit about with us today.
Oh my, yes I do. And I can think about different teachers and their faces are their eyes, the sparkle in their eyes is just as crystal clear right now in my mind as it was when I was in third grade and sixth grade and eighth grade and in high school. And they were different teachers, but several of them, Mrs. Teta Manza, Mrs. Lombardo, they were my art and music teachers, and they helped me understand that I could express myself in creative and different ways. Mr. Dambaugh was a junior high algebra teacher and then a high school geometry and trigonometry teacher. And I will just share, I kind of goofed off one year completely. But the next year I had him again, and it was a clean slate. And I think that that's one beautiful gift that many teachers give to their learners, that each day is a new day. And yesterday may have not been our best day, but today can be our best day. And that was a wonderful gift that he gave me from that as well. So I think that the common thread is that each one of them just somehow, as many students as they serve, they helped me feel like I was very important and the most important student to them. And boy, that helped me feel like somebody noticed that I mattered. And I think that made all the difference.
It's wonderful to hear. Thank you so much.
We want to thank Dr. Allison Arnold for joining us today. Dr. Allison Arnold directs the Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness at Central Michigan University, and we are honored to have you as part of our team here at the university and appreciative of the time that you spent with us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Orlando. Thank you, Janelle.
Thank you.